Then we start here on the top of Chedorman Aleph by the two dots. Gemara is quoting from the Mishnah that Shachor Kecheret, the black that we're talking about is like ink. So Amar Rabbi Rav Huna, Cheret Shamro Dayo. So the Cheret that we're talking about here is Dyo, which was the ink that was common in their time that they used to write with. So Tani Nami Hochi. We also have a similar support from Breita, which is Shachor Kecheret, that the Shachor that we're talking about, Vishachor Shamro Dyo, the Shachor that we're talking about is ink. Vilemet Dyo. Why don't you say it straight out that it's ink? Why are you using the word cheret if you meant ink? Iyamar dio hava minaki pachuchuta de diuta. I would have thought it was the warty part of the ink. Kamash v'lon, that that's not the case. It's kicheruta de diuta. It is the sediment or the hardened part of the ink that's at the bottom. Thing that you can crush, that can become flaky. So now, ibailu v'lacha ubiyabeshta. That sediment at the bottom has two parts to it. The bottom is very dry. The top of that sediment is somewhat moist. So are we talking about within the sediment, are we talking about the very dry part, or are we talking about the moist part? Tashma, the Rabbi Ami, poly kurta diuto bodikba. Rabbi Ami used to crush, flake that sediment, and then compare it to the dam in order to check whether it was the right color. But you see from that, that he was talking about something that was dry and solid, that he was able to crush, flake, in order to use it for investigating or checking out bidikot of dam. Samar Yehuda Meshmuel, kikir, kidyo, uchanav tmeya. We're talking about, Rashi brings down two interpretations for kir. One is black wax. The other possibility is that it's a name of an asiv, some sort of herb that was black. Kidyo, which we know is ink. Uchanav, and like a grape, a black grape. All of these colors are tmeya. Vizu shishaninu. This is what we learned in the Mishnah, Mukmikain Tma'a, that if it's darker than the black of the cheret, then that is Tma'a. Samar Velozar, Kezayit, Kezefet, Keorev Tahor. Talking about a black olive, pitch, and a raven, that black is Tahor. Zushishanino, Diamikain Tahor. That if it's lighter than that black, it's Tahor. So they're giving you examples of blacks that are darker than the cheret mentioned in the Mishnah, and they have giving you examples of black that is lighter than that mentioned in the Mishnah. Ulamar kilavusha siyua. It's like the clothing from this location or this place, siyua, where they used to make black clothing. The black of that area is classified as the black that we're talking about in the Mishnah. Ula ikla lepumpedita. This is a very interesting story. Ula went to Pumpedita, chazila utaya, saw this merchant, this Arab merchant, the lebush lavusha ukma. He was wearing black clothing on him. Amar lahu, he said to his talmidim, Shachor that's not, the shachor that's missed, the black that's mentioned in the Mishnah, tihai, is like what he's wearing. He's wearing the black that we were talking about in the Mishnah. So martu mine purta purta, they ended up coming to him and buying it off of him, ripping it off of him piece by piece. Yahavubei arba mei zuze, in the end he netted 400 zuz from all the Talmidim going over and buying the samples from him. They basically went, in the end they said, wait, can we buy this off of you? And they bought piece by piece off of him until he netted 400 zuz because they all wanted a sample of the color that Ula was speaking about. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eilu kelim ha'olayrin habayim imidinat hayam. These are the bigadim of the olayrin that come from overseas that are black. That's the black that we're talking about. Now these olayrin, Rashi says, are blanim. They are the bathhouse caretakers that wore a specific type of clothing that came from this place. Or Rashi says, lashon acher shem makom, that olarayin is either the name of the place where this clothing came from, or olarayin refers to these bath caretakers, and they used to wear this black clothing. Either one of those is the description of the black that we're talking about. There's a third possibility, which is that it's talking about the clothes of the court, and they were black. So the memra, so the assumption here is the ukman in who, that they are black. Vahamar luhu Rabbi Yanai the Vanav. Rabbi Yanai says to his children, Vanai, altik buruni lo bekelim shkorim lo bekelim levanim. Do not bury me in black, and do not bury me in white. Shechorim, don't bury me in black. Shemeske, maybe I will merit. I'll merit to go to Gan Eden, and I'll be like an avel. I'll be wearing black, and everybody else will be wearing lechatanim, but wearing white. Levanim, don't put me into white. Shemeloeske, maybe I will not merit, and I'll be in Gan Yinom. Ve'yekechatan ben avelim, and everybody else there will be black, and I'll be wearing white. Ela bekelim holarayin. Make sure that you put me in this type of clothing, habayim midinat hayam, which obviously from the conversation are not black and white. There's some other color. Rashi says they were red, which is interesting. I think you would stand out even more with red, if you're wearing red amongst the white and red amongst the black. But Rashi says that it was a color of red. So, Alma Lavuch Meininu, you see that that clothing is not black. So how could we suggest that that's the black that we're talking about in the Mishnah? Look, Ashag Beglima Abibitora. Difference between the coat, or the overcoat, and the Torah. Torah is a shulchan, is a table. So the way Rashi describes it is the differences between the cloak that you wear, which is red. Torah is like a mapava sadin. It's talking about a tablecloth or a sheet that you put on top of it. Those are black. So it depends what the item that you're speaking about. You're speaking about the cloak, or you're speaking about the table items, or the, what were used for covering the table, napkins, whatever it was that they used it for, that was black. So each one of them is referring to a different part of this olarein. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, v'chulan in bugim ela gabei matlit levana. If you want to check the color of the damim, you use as a background, you put a white cloth as the background, because that helps to accentuate the color, and you're able to be discerning about the color. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Dumi, v'shachor agabei adom. When it comes to black, you don't put the black on top of white, but you put the black on top of red. They don't argue. When Yitzchak Bar Dumi made his statement, he was talking about black and black only, that you put on a red background. And Shmuel's statement was that you put it on a white background, that's talking about all other colors besides black. Is that really true? Shmuel should have incorporated that in his statement. Put everything on a white background except for black. The fact that he doesn't accept black from his statement means that he believes that black also has to be put on a white background. They're arguing about black. Meaning Shmuel believes everything goes on a white background, including black. Yitzchak Bar Dumi says, no, black goes on a red background. Samula kulan amuk mikan tamei diamikan tahor kishachor. Ula says that all the colors that are mentioned in our Mishnah, even though the Mishnah only qualifies black in the Mishnah, and says by black, if it's darker than that, it's tamei, if it's lighter than that, it's tahor. Nevertheless, Ula says that qualification applies to all the colors in the Mishnah. If it's darker than that color, it's tamei. If it's lighter than that color, tahor. Vela maishna shachor dinakot. So then, why did it mention Shachor in particular if all the colors have this qualification? That Rabbi Chanina already told us in yesterday's daf that black is not really a color, independent color. It's just red that went bad. So I would think even lighter than the black color would be tamei also, because the shade of black is not so important. Black is just a derivative of red, and so the shade isn't as important as the fact that it is black. And therefore, I would think, even if it was lighter than the color mentioned in the Mishnah, it would still be tamei. Kamash Malan, that's not. So by black, I had a havamina to suggest that even when it's lighter, it's tamei. So therefore, the Mishnah specified by black, difference between being darker as tamei and being lighter as tahor. But it applies equally to all the colors in the Mishnah. V'ami bar Abba amar v'chulan amok mikan tamei, di'amikan nami tamei. Ami says, doesn't matter. Darker than that color is tamei, lighter than that color is tamei. Chutz mishachor. Except for black. Black in the Mishnah has the qualification that if it's darker than it, it's tamei. If it's lighter than it, it's tahor. But every other color, doesn't matter. Darker or lighter, it's tamei. Elamaya hani shi'urei d'rabbanon. Then what's the point of having these colors that are mentioned in the Mishnah? If all reds are problematic, if all shades of red that are mentioned in the Mishnah are all problematic, then why do you mention these colors at all? It's everything is problematic, lighter and darker. Lafuke dia di dia. That's if it's very faded, the color. And that there is the color that you mentioned in the Mishnah, darker than that, lighter than that, then it's lighter than that, lighter than that. If you're two steps removed from the color that's mentioned in the Mishnah, that already is tahor. If you're 1 degree away from the color that's mentioned in the Mishnah, whether it's darker or lighter, there you would be tamei. Vigadam, right? And some say, Rami Brava, Amar B'chulan, Amok Mikain Tahor, Diam Mikain Tahor. Everything that's darker than that is tahor, and lighter than that is tahor. Chutz Mishachor, except for black. Ulhachi Ma'ane Shurei D'Rabbanon. And that's what the Shur of the Rabbanon is for, in order to, by black, tell you that if it's darker than that, it's tamei. If it's lighter than that, it's tahor. Whereas all the other colors, exactly that color is what is tamei. Now it's true that the Mishnah, when it talked about the colors of red, it going through different degrees. That means that if it's darker than one of the colors mentioned, it's tahor until it reaches the next category, the next color. You reach the next color, that would be tamei as well. You pass that color in the spectrum, again, to be tahor, even though it's darker, until you reach the next level. So the way we're describing it now, there would be stages of red that are problematic, but anything in between those different reds would be fine. Bar kapar amar, kulan, amok mikan tamei, all of the colors that are darker are tamei, dia mikan tahor. It's lighter than that, tahor, chutz mimezik. Except for the one instance, the Mishnah was talking about mazug. Mazug is the mixture, diluted wine. That, shamok mikan tahor, if it's darker, it's tahor, dia mikan tahor, and if it's lighter than that, it's tahor. That was the one exception to that. Bar kapara adyu le vidochi, they brought before him, they showed him dam, lighter than that, and he was mitair. Amikule, they showed him something darker than that, and he was vidochi, and he was mitair. So they showed him colors around the mezeg, some darker, some lighter, and he was mitair, all of them, like his shita. So Amar Rabbi Chanina, kami nafish gavro, tibibe kishmate, or kid avid kishmate, how great is this individual who holds like his position? He actually paskins like he holds. And therefore, he was mitaher, these reds that were both darker and lighter than the mezeg. Right. Because ula has the same application by all the colors. Whereas bar kapara accepts mezeg from that, where he says even darker than mezeg is okay. And again, once you reach the next color in the spectrum, it would become problematic again. So it's only darker than mezeg until you reach the next color above that. Ukekeren karkom, and like a bright crocus, that was one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, and as Rashi points out in the Mishnah, Karen is like from the word Karan or Panav. His face was radiating, or light that emanated from it. Karen means something bright. So that's Karen Karko means a bright crocus. Tana, lach, velo yavish. Has to be moist, and not dried out. Tani, chada kiktachton velo kelyon. Like the lower one, not the upper one. But tani idach, another bright that says kelyon velo kedachton, the upper one, not the lower one. Tani idach, and we have a third bright that says kelyon, v'choshkein tachton. We have another bright that says like the upper one and certainly the bottom one, v'tani idach, and another one says like the bottom one and certainly the upper one. So now you have to reconcile all of these bright dough. How do we reconcile them? I'm right by you. Let me explain to you. Talata dare. There are three levels of leaves on a crocus. The talata tarfan havyan. And in each level there are three leaves. Naku dara mitzia v'tarfa mitziato. The one that we're looking for here is the middle leaf in the middle row. That's what you should be focused on. Now we can go back and explain all the brightot. First one said, kitachton velo kelyon, the lower one and not the upper one. That's referencing between the upper row and the middle row. So it says, take the lower row of the upper two rows. Should take the lower one, which is the middle row, velo kelyon, and not the top row. Tiny yidach, the next bright that says, kelyon velo kitachton, the upper one, not the lower one, it's talking about the lower two rows. It says, take the upper of the two lower rows, meaning the middle row, and not the lowest row. V'tani yidach, and another bright that says, kelyon, v'choshkein tachton, it's talking about within the middle row, there are three leaves. All three leaves are good, but the best of those three leaves is the middle leaf. So it says, in that bright, of kelyon, if you take the upper leaf in the middle row, that's fine. V'choshkein tachton, the one below it is even better. The middle leaf is even better. And the other brighter that says, kit tachton, v'choshkein elyon, is also talking about the middle leaves. Those leaves, if you take the bottom of the three middle leaves of the middle row, that's fine. V'choshkein elyon, the one above it is even better, which is the middle leaf in the middle row. So that's how we'll reconcile all of these brightot. Kiatu lekamei de Rabbi Avo. He came before Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Avo. He mentioned to them, bigushayu shaninu. They still have to be in their clods of earth. They have to be planted still. They can't be already picked and severed from the ground. We're talking about crocuses here that are still planted. The next thing in the Mishnah is kimei adama, earthy liquid, or liquid that has earth in it. So tada rabbanan, kimei adama, how do you do this? Mevi adama shmeina, bring fertile soil, mebikat beit kerem, from the place, the valley of beit kerem. Matzif alei amayim, and then you float water on top of it. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Then our Gemara says Rabbi Akiva, although the Gra changes this to Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda Meir mi begat Yudpat, from the valley of Yudpat. That's where they bring the earth from in order to make this mixture. Yosio Meir mi begat Sikhne, from the place of Sikhne, which is near Yudpat. And Rabbi Shimon Omer af mi begat Ginosar, from the valley of Ginosar, which is in the Galilah Tachton. It was either near the Kinneret or near a lake that's called Ginosar there in the Galilah Tachton. And the Gemara mentions in other places that this was a unique place where the fruit grew very quickly, ripened very quickly, and was large and fantastic fruit. Uka Yotzeben, anything like that. So Tani Yidach, we have another bright that says, Uka Me Adama, you bring, this is Me Adama, how do you do it? Mevi Adama Shmeina, you bring fertile soil, Mebikat Beit Karim, Matzif Alei Mayim, Kipkuvat Hashum, and then you float water onto it, on top of it, until you have like the skin or husk of a garlic that's floating on top, that amount of water that's reached above it. There's no measurement of how much water, because there's no measurement about how much earth or soil you have to put in there. Whatever soil you put out there, you have to put enough water that you'll have the water floating to klipat hashum above it. You can't check it when it's clear after the earth or the soil has settled in the water. Elakurim, they have to be mixed up so that it's in a state where it's not clear. So lo chozer v'ochran. If it settles and the water clears, then you have to mix them again. And when he mixes them, ein ochran biyad. He's not allowed to do it with a hand. Hello bekli, but with utensil. Now the Gemara wants to understand what that means. See by lo ein ochrin oto biyad hello bekli. What does that mean when you say that you can't mix it with your hand, but rather with your utensil? Tolol rami biyade ulachrino means don't mix it in your hand, but rather in a utensil. Don't put it into your hand and mix it there. Aval b'malno, if it's in a utensil, ki achle biyade shapredam. If you mix it with your hand, it's fine. Oh, dilma tolol achrino biyade el b'mana. Or maybe it means it has to be an utensil and mix it with another utensil inside of there, not with your hand. The Gemara is unsure of what they demand for it. A kli, not a hand, is here. Is that the utensil that's holding it? The mixture is held, is in a utensil, not in your hand. Or are we saying that it has to be an utensil, but when you mix it, you must mix it with kli, with a utensil, like a spoon, and not with your hand? Zag Gemara says, Tashma. We have an answer to this. Keshu bodkan, ein bodkan ela bekos. When you check it, you must do it inside of a goblet, inside of a cup. So here you see that it has to be inside of a utensil. It says, v'tayin te bailach, v'dika bekos, akira b'mai. Fine, we know that has to be inside of a utensil. But when you mix it in that utensil, what do you mix it with? That you don't have an answer to. That Gemara leaves as a take. It was uncertain about that. Kiyat to the kamei deramba barvu amadahu bim koma sheninu. When you take earth, soil, and you do these mixtures, you have to do them on location. Because once you move earth or soil from its natural location, it changes color. So you can't travel with this earth or soil to somewhere else in order to do the checks. You need to have that color right there on the spot so that you get the proper mixture, the proper color. Rabbi Chanina, pale kurto de girgashto ubodik bay. He used to crush potter's clay and check with it. He used to crush up potter's clay and use that as a color mark to decide whether the colors were problematic or not problematic. Laitale Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yossi be'askara. Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yossi cursed anybody with askara. Askara is some sort of sickness, something that inhibits your ability to breathe. A lot of people say that it's croup, which causes some sort of constricting of the trachea and makes it very difficult for the individual to breathe. So he cursed them with that, because Rabbi Chanina Chakim, Kuleyam Elav Chakime, Rabbi Chanina is a big Talmud Chacham, and he can use this type of item to do checks with. But everybody else doesn't have that discerning or ability, or doesn't have the knowledge that Rabbi Chanina has. And therefore, Rabbi Chanina did it. But nobody else should emulate Rabbi Chanina, because it's not proper. So, Achyam Rabbi Yochanan. Yochanan said, Chachmata de Rabbi Chanina, Garmali d'loyechzei damo. Rabbi Chanina's wisdom, or his great ability to discern colors, caused me that I did not see Marot Tamim. Because mitamina, mitaher. When I used to be mitamei, certain colors of blood that I saw, he would say they were tahor. Mitarana, colors that I saw, that I said were tahor. Mitamei, he said they were tamei. So after that I said, I don't know what's going on. Rabbi Chanina knows what's going on, I don't know. And he stopped seeing marot damim, or he never saw the marot damim because of that. Amar Rav Elazar, and v'dunuto de Rabbi Chanina, the great humility of Rabbi Chanina, garmeli d'chazei damas, made it that I saw marot damim. It's a very humble, tremendous humility. And yet he still was willing to put himself in a position where he would have to deal with the sfeikot of Marot Damim. How could I not look at these or not see Marot Damim? A person who's humble, humility, does not like to put himself in a position where they're controversial or they're in controversy. Yet Rabbi Chanina still placed himself in that position where he was willing to take on the difficult situations of Marot Damim. And so Rabbi Elazar says about himself, I, who are not on the level of the humbleness, humility of Rabbi Chanina, certainly should allow myself to get involved in these types of sfikot. So I'm Rabbi Zera, Tiva de Bavel, Garmali de Lochazei Dama. The coinage system in Bavel caused it that I did not see Marot Damim, because the coinage system was very complex. And Rabbi Zera says, I never got it, I never understood it, or I can never discern in terms of coins. And therefore, I didn't see Marot Damim. Damina, B'tiva lo Yadana. I can't be discerning in terms of the coins. B'dami Yadana? How can I be discerning when it comes to colors of blood? So it seems that he was a similar skill set. He says, if I'm unable to have this skill set when it comes to coins, then certainly I'm not going to have this skill set when it comes to damim. In terms of the coins, you had to have experts. You used to have to take coins to a shulchani to tell you if it was a viable coin, if the imprint was correct. I mean, both for forgeries, but more importantly, for, in their day, the weight and the shapes of the coin determined its real value. A coin was really made out of the metal that was in use, whether it was gold or silver, and therefore the weight was important. A coin wasn't just representative value, it was the actual value. So you had to have experts look at it. So he says, I was unable to be discerning within the coinage of Babel, which was so complex and difficult. How could I be discerning about Damim? The Memra, the Betiva, Talia, Milta, did there some correlation between understanding coins or the coinage system and Marot Damim? So here over here, the Girsa, Machok between Rashi and Tosafot, what the Girsa should be. Tosafot, the Girsa we have in here is like Tosafot, that's Rabba. Whereas Rashi says the Girsa should be Rovo. So we'll read it like Tosafot because it makes it a lot easier, but just know that Rashi changes the Girsa here to Rovo. Rabba, Hava, who, the Yoda, Betiva. Rabba himself knew the coinage system, was discerning, was able to see coins. Velo Yada Bedama, and he was unable to see Damim. He did not see Marot Damim. So Gemara says, Koshkin Kamar. It's a Kavachomer. Rabba, who knew to be discerning within coins, didn't see Damim. Rabbi Zera says, I should see it. I don't even know the coin system, so how should I look at the Marot Damim? Another possibility, which is, Tavo could be from Toveya, a coinage, or Tiva could be medicine, in the sense of someone who is familiar with different medicinal herbs and so on and so forth. So Tiva could be one of those two items, which is either Tiva is the formation,
minting,
the coining of coins, or Tiva can mean like Teva, nature, with someone who knows the natural herbs or is discerning within different things in nature. The two possibilities of what Tiva could be, I explained it with the coinage, could explain it the other way, which is with Teva, someone who is knowledgeable, call it medicinal knowledge of sorts. Ula ikla pumpatita. Ula went to pumpatita, aita le kamei dama velo chozo. They brought before him Marot Damim and he wasn't willing to see it. Amar Uma Rabbi Elazar de Morador Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar was the big gun in Eretz Yisrael. He was the authority in Eretz Yisrael. Ava Kimikla Atra de Rabbi Yehuda. When he came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, meaning Pumbedita, where Rabbi Yehuda was the Morad Atra, Luchazi Damo. He didn't see Damim there because of respect for the Morad Atra. Even though he was the ultimate authority in Eretz Yisrael, and it probably was greater than Rabbi Yehuda and Marot Damim, still he deferred to the Morad Atra when he came there, and he refused to see Marot Damim in the city of Rabbi Yehuda. So Ula says the same thing. How could I look at Marot Damim in the city of Rabbi Yehuda? So that, based on that, Luchazi Damo, and I could say, how could I see it? V'amai korolei Marot Eretz Yisrael. Why was Rabbi Elazar called the authority in this matter in Eretz Yisrael? Da'itata da'iti damo lekamei. A woman brought before him a Marot Damim, came to Rabbi Elazar in front of Rabbi Elazar, Aviyoti Rabbi Yami Kamei, and Rabbi Yami, his Talmud, was sitting next to him. Archei, he smelled it, Amrla Haidam Chimudu. This is Dam from a woman who had a sensation of loss. Botter de Nafka. After the woman left, Atafala Rabbi Yami. Rabbi Yami accompanied her, he followed her. Amalei. So she says to him, Bali Aya Baderech, my husband was away, Vichamatif, and I desired him. Kariyalei, Rabbi Yami says it's about his Rabbi, Rabbi Elazar, Soda Shem Liriyav. Shem's secrets are passed to those that fear him. So here you saw how discerning or how understanding Rabbi Elazar was of the Damim, and that's why he was called Marad Eretz Yisrael, the authority in this matter in Eretz Yisrael. Ifra Hurmiz Ime de Shavar Malka. She shows up a number of times in Shas. This Ifra Hurmiz, who was the mother of Shavar Malka. There's another interpretation brought by Rashi in other places that it was talking about Shmuel, but it doesn't make so much sense. So Shavar Malka was a king who was very favorably inclined towards the Jews. And his mother, Ephraim Hormiz, was quasi-converted to Judaism. She wasn't a full-fledged convert, but she practiced many things like a Jew. We know that she kept a neder nezirut. She sent karbanot up to the Mikdash. And one of the other things is, it seems like she kept the dinim of Duma and Tahara with regards to Nida. So she, Shadra Dam Lekamei de Ravo, she sent her blood to Ravo. V'yoti v'ravavadja kamei. And his Talmid Ravavadja was sitting there. Arche, again, he smelled it. Amrla, I dam chimudu. He made the same conclusion. This is blood of lust. So Amrla lebra, she, that's Ifra Ormi, says to her son, Tachaze kamecha kamigi yudai. See how bright, smart the Jews are? Because he was able to discern what type of blood I sent them, and he's right about that. So just for here, this is where the Machloket Rashi and Tosfot comes. Before we said that, somebody didn't see Damim. He knew about Tiva. Again, either the coinage or medicinal, natural knowledge. Yet he didn't see Damim. Over here it says that the mother of Shavur Malka sent Damim to this individual and he saw him. So if you say back there it was a Rabbah, then it makes sense that over here that it's Rava. Rava didn't see Marot Damim, but Rava did see the Marot Damim. So the Gemara before is talking about Rava, and the Gemara over here is talking about Rava, and that's the way Tosafot reads it. Rashi on the other hand says both of them are Rava. The Rava didn't see Marot Damim. What are you talking about over here? Over here he sees Damim, he's even like an expert, like Rabbi Elazar in Eretz Yisrael. So the answer is, Rashi says, Nes, Itrachashle Nisa, a miracle happened to him. He was able to be discerning in the Dam here, even though normally he didn't see Marot Damim. That's the way Rashi reads the Gemara. Obviously, Tosafot's interpretation is much easier to read that it was Rava before, and over here it was Rava. Amar La, her son, Shvor Malkus, says to his mother, Dilma Kasuma Baruba. Maybe it's like a blind person looking for a window or for a skylight. I mean, that he bumps into it by accident. He can't see it. But maybe he bumps into accident. They call me, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. So maybe he got lucky. Rava got lucky this time. So how the Shadrile Shitin Mine Damo sent her 60 blood samples, you know, in terms of Damim, Marot Damim to see. Bikula Aminu, he knew all of them. He recognized all of them. He was discerning in all of them. And he was able to tell her what they were. How Batra, the last one was Dam Kinim Ava Velo Yada. It was the blood from a louse. And he was not able to see that or discern that. Istayim Milto, he got lucky. He sent to her a comb, basically a lice comb. He sent back to her a lice comb as a gift. Imagine that. He sent to the mother of the king a lice comb. But in their day, obviously, it was a much bigger issue. And therefore, that was considered to be a very nice gift. Some fancy metal comb to take out the lice or to kill the lice. So Amra Yudai, Vane Deliba Yadvito. So he got lucky, and this is what Tosfot says. Here's the miracle that happened to Rava. Not the other part was not a miracle. This part was the miracle that by chance, he sent her a gift that acknowledged that that Damim was the Dam Kinim. He did it without that understanding. He just happened to send her a lice comb. And then she thought from that gift, he must have understood that the blood that I sent him was blood of a louse. So that was the miracle that happened to him, that he was able, through the gift, show that he knew what he was talking about, even though he wasn't so certain about what he was talking about. And she says, they sit in the chambers of the heart, and that they are at the core of knowledge, sits with the Jews. And that's what she says to her son, after he had said maybe it was just luck, after he does it with 60 damim, it's pretty clear that they know what they're talking about. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Mereisha Chava Chazina Damo. In the beginning I used to see Marot Damim, came into Amroli Imeidi Yitzchak Bri, after the mother of my son Yitzchak told me, which it should be his wife, right, the mother of my son Yitzchak told me, I don't bring the first drop of blood that I see, I don't bring it before the Rabbanim, Mishum Dezima, because it's mixed in, Lo Chazin, after that I stopped seeing Damim. So he was worried because the women were bringing Damim to them and they were not bringing the first drop of blood. And it might be that the first drop of blood looked tamei, and the second drop looked tahor. And he was being mitaher the damim, and not being able to see the first drop of blood, because they thought it was zima. So now, what about everybody else? How come Rabbi Yehuda is the only one who had this problem? What about all the other rabbanim? So Tosfot gives two possibilities about other rabbanim. It says, V'shach hachamim she'arim lo yu machmirim kol kach. They weren't so machmir. They figured that if it was the second drop and the first drop, it wasn't such a big difference. Oh, she'ayu b'kimiyoter. They were more discerning. They had more expertise in the matter. And they were able to tell, even with the second drop, whether it was different than the first or not. And therefore, that didn't make a difference for them. So for whatever reason, Rabbi Yehuda dropped out of doing Marot Damim of Nida. But, bent me'ala torah v'adai chazina. Says, for a woman, after she has a leida, after she gives birth, and she has your mei tohar for up to the 40th day by a zachar, up to the 80th day for nekeva. After that day, on the 41st and the 81st day, if she sees damim, she's a nida. That damim he did see. Because over there, you weren't coming from a standing stop. From a standing stop, the first drop of blood has zima in it, has some sort of sweat that is mixed in with it, moisture that's mixed in with it. But then the blood after that is much clearer. But over here, a woman who's been bleeding over that whole period of time, as he says, the mayan is patuach. The mayan has been open that whole time. When she sees her first marot, he die afterwards, it's not going to have that moisture or sweat mixed in with it because she's been having flows of blood the whole time. And therefore, he was willing to see those damim. Yalta, who is the wife of Rav Nachman, Aita Dama the Kamei Rabba Barachano. She brought damim, Marot damim, to Rabba Barachano to see them, v'tamei. And he was mitameid for her. Hadar Aita the Kamei Rabbi Yitzchak Breder of Yehuda. After he was mitameid, she took it over to Rabbi Yitzchak Breder of Yehuda, v'dochilah, and he was mitaher for her. So now Gemara is going to ask a question in 1 second about how did she do that, how did she shop the psak. So we'll give it that 1 second. What's interesting here is that she did not show her marot damim to her husband. Her husband Rav Nachman, who was a bakiyan shaskulom, yet she didn't bring it to him. She took it to Rabbi Barchano, she took it here over here the second time to Yitzchak Breder of Yehuda. Why did she take it to Rav Nachman? Tosfot says, don't conclude from this that a husband is not allowed to see his wife's marot. Says that's not correct. A husband is allowed to see his wife's marot. So then why didn't she take it to Rav Nachman? One possibility is, she thought, Shemaloya Baki. Maybe he wasn't an expert in marot damim. He might have been a Talmud Chacham, but these were better or bigger experts in marot damim, so she took it to them. Or, that she was worried, this is a good thing that probably is true, but a woman, she was worried that her husband would be machmir. That when it comes to others, when he was giving psak, he felt confident about it. By himself, where he has, as we saw before, individual, when he comes to do a series of safek, he has pangs of guilt, in a sense that say to him, you know what, I want to stay away from this. And therefore he wasn't going to be discerning his psak, he'd be machmir. So she didn't want him to be machmir, therefore she went to third parties that won't have that giot badavar. The last possibility is shalotit ganeh b'fanav. That shouldn't be repulsive in any way. That she shouldn't be serving his damim, and that would cause him to be repulsed from that. So therefore you take it to a third party, an independent party. Because of one of those three reasons, Tosafot says that she didn't bring it to her husband. But again, he says that there's a Mishnah in the Nigayim that says that a person can see all Nigayim except his own Nigayim. There is a second opinion in Tana, the Mishnah, that you can't see any relatives Nigayim. And a person can be Matir all Nidorim except for the Nidriyatzmo, his own Nidorim. Another Tana says even his wife's Nidorim. But what's not mentioned in the Mishnah is that a person can see all Marot Damim except for his wife's Marot Damim. The Mishnah does not say that. The Tosafot says, the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say that shows you that a husband is allowed to see the Marot Damim of his wife. Now, the Gemara wants to know, Eichi Ovid Hochi. How did Yalta do that? How did she go and shop the psak? Or, more importantly, how did Rabbi Yitzchak Breder, the Rabbi Yehuda, paskin against Rabbi Bar Chano? V'atanya, we have a braito, Chocham Shitimei, in Chaveru Sheilat Ta'er. If a Chacham says something's Tamei, his friend is not allowed to be Mita'eret. Asar, if another Chacham says it's Asur, in Chaveru Sheilatir, this other person can't be Matir. So the Gemara explains the case. Mi kara, Muyahabe Metamilo. Truth is, when she went to Rabbi Yitzchak Breder of Yehuda, he was also mitameyed for her. Because he heard that Rabbi Barachan had been mitameyed, and therefore he followed in suit. He didn't even paskin. Came into Amarlei, then Yalta tells him, "D'chol yom ahava midachili ki'ay gavna." Every other day, Rabbi Barachan used to say, this type of blood is tor. Any similar color like that, he was mitayer. V'yidnehu d'chash v'enei. He had some pain in his eyes, he had some difficulty with seeing that day. So therefore, I think that he was swayed by the pain in his eyes. That's what caused him to be mitameyit today. But otherwise, he's mitaherit. Then, after he heard that, dochilo, he was mitaherit for her. So only after that piece of information was Rabbi Yitzchak, Breder of Yehuda, mitaherit for her. Mar says, umi mehemni? She believed. She over here is giving information that's going to sway the psak, because she believed. Mar says, in. Vatanya, we have a brayta that supports that. V'nichuta, v'nemeneti shalomar, kezir reiti, v'avantiv. A woman goes to a chacham to ask about marot damim. She can say, I saw this color. Even though the cloth is lost now, we don't have the color in front of us. She is nemenet to say, this is the color that I saw. This is what it looked like. The Gemara says, zibaylo, kezeti her ish ploni chacham mahu. Can a woman say to another woman, another woman brings her damim, marot damim. She says, you know what? I showed this to the chacham. That color that you're bringing me now, I showed it to the chacham and he was mitayer for me. Can she transfer psak from that was given to her to another woman? Because she has an ability to say that these damim are the same. So my says, Tashma, from our case over here, Nemeneti Shalom Mark is Eritiv Avativ. We have this brayta here that a woman is allowed to say that to the Chacham, that I saw a similar color and I lost it. My says, Shani Altam, delay to the Kama. Over here, by the case where she says that that's what I thought it looked like, that's what it would look like, there we believe her because we have no choice. Cloth is gone. So what's the alternative? The alternative is not to believe her? We don't have no way to make a decision. So over there, she's Nemenet because that gives us the ability to make a decision. But over here, that where it's in front of us, and we have a choice between the woman going to a chacham, or asking her friend, the other woman, who says, yeah, yeah, the Chacham saw this and he's Meta'er, we're going to demand that she goes to the Chacham. Maybe that's the case. So Tashma, the Gemara brings our case of Yalto now. Yalto, I said, Dama the Kamei Rabbi Berchana, but Tamilo. Then she's at the Kamei Rabbi Yitzchak, Vrede Rabbi Yehuda, but Dochilo. The whole story. And we said, what was the conclusion of the case there? Originally, it was mitameir for her. Every other day, Rabbi Berchan was mitaher that. And today he had a problem with his eyes. Then he was mitaher. Alma. Why did Rabbi Yitzchak Breda Rabbi Yehuda change his mind? The answer is, because Yalta's conversation with him. So that means that Yalta's believed. She gave him information that changed the psak. So the fact is, Alma Me'eminla. A woman is believed, not only in a case where the cloth is not in front of us, or the damim are not in front of us, but even when it's in front of us, she's believed to say that another chacham is mitaher, or a chacham is mitaher. So Mar says, no, Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Yehuda Gamrei Samach. He didn't rely on Yalta. He was so mech on his mesorah, on his learning. He knew this maradam was tahor. But why wasn't he mitaheret? Because he knew that Rabbi Rechana was mitameit. So he subscribed to the braita that we saw before, that you're not allowed to be mitaher, something that another chacham was mitameh. After Yalta told him the story, then he realized that Rabbi Rechana in this case had made a mistake, and that it had to do with the way his eyes were feeling that day, and then he was willing to be mitaher on his own, of his own volition. Not because Yalta said it was tahor, but because he thought it was tahor. Just originally he wasn't willing to give the psak that it's tahor because he was going against his chaver, and he's not allowed to go against his chaver. So now we have the issue about shopping psak. Tosfot over here deals with it. Tosfot says right away, the fiyap shat, mashu lekach emin ledvarel, aval binyan acher perush below dvarel, lo yamatir afakav da'agam rei samach. Sounds like that she swayed the case over here. Sounds like that, truthfully, yes, he was relying on his own psak to make it tahor, but he wasn't willing to give that psak until she told him the story. And therefore, she was believed enough to allow him to go against the psak of Rabbi Berchana. And over here, since he's relying on his own mesora, he's willing to be matir. And listen to this. Afagav de chacham kvar asar. Even though another chacham said it's asur, if he, based on his own mesora and his own information, is willing to be mitaher, then that's fine. But yesh makshe al yalta. And some people ask about yalta, hechi avde hochi. Well, how could she do this? Hamrina beperakam mesekhet avodah zarah. We saw this together in avodah zarah. And yishal chacham betimei lo yishal chacham mitaher. Well, you can't shop your psak. If you go to one chacham, he says talmai, you can't go to another chacham to get the psak you want, that it's tahor. You can't shop the psak. It's unbelievable. The asker of the question is not the problem. Person who wants to ask a question can go around and ask as many people as they want. The obligation resides with the posek. Person can ask as many rabbanim as he wants. He'll get more information about it. He'll get better psak. He goes around and asks many talmidei chachamim, you get a lot more information. The problem is, the other chacham cannot undermine the first chacham. Upamim sharishon tueh. And sometimes the first one did make a mistake, but yatzadar lora, and then we get a better understanding. Tosfot HaRosh over here is more explicit and says as such. Avashuel yechol lishol mashiyitza b'vad shimor ploni timeili. You have to have full disclosure. When you go ask the next chacham, you can't go ask them as if you're starting from scratch. You have to tell them that I already went to this chacham, and he told me tamei. What do you think? So then that chacham has an obligation over there, again, not to go against the first chacham, because he cannot be mitaher, someone else who's mitamei. But that's only if the psak has to do with a chrat adat. It's to do with something where he's making a decision based on the facts, and he's trying to make a decision on it. If his friend already said asur or tamei, he cannot be mitaher matir. If, based on his mesora, he would be mitaher in that case, then it's okay. Because then he's not going against the hachrat, hadat of the previous chacham, he's going based on his mesora. And then he can go back to the original chacham and talk to him about it. Ve'mi'ira l'sheni shita rishon. But in a case where he thinks the first one made a decision problem, it's not that he has a mesorah that goes against the mesorah of the other individual. He thinks he made a bad decision, then he has to go back to the original posek and convince him that he's wrong. There's different stages and responsibilities on the parties here. The person who's asking for the psak can go and shop the psak. It's not a problem as long as they disclose what they've gotten so far. As long as they give full disclosure, it's fine. The posek can give the psak if it's all about misora. If it's simply about misora and with knowledge, then he can give psak against the original psak because he thinks the first person's wrong and he has on what to be sumech. On the other hand, if it's achra, where there's a decision or discernment that has to be made, the first individual said tameh or asur, the second individual, based on his own achra, may not say mutar or tahor. He has to go back and convince the first individual that he was wrong, and then they can change the psak together. But he can't give a achra that goes against the first achra. And again, I think that's important in terms of undermining the rabbinic authority. What the Gemara doesn't want over here is it to become a free-for-all, where one rav is undermining, and then people lose respect for rabbinic authority if you allow everybody to change the psak of someone else. So therefore, if it's clear that you have a separate or different misora, over there it's not undermining rabbinic authority, it's saying that there was a different misora, and that you can say. You can give the person that information. If it's about achra, then you have a problem, because then you're really undermining the ability of rabbanim to make decisions, and there we have asked you to go back and convince the individual they made a mistake. And again, the person shabbing the psak, Tosu says it's beneficial. You should ask more people. The more people ask, the more likely you get the right answer. But again, you have to have full disclosure. You have to tell them that you got psak from someone else, so that we don't end up in these problems where a person is giving achra neged someone else.
What if you have more so that it comes to them,
so we had the case before with Rabbi Lazar, who was known to be the authority in Marot Damim. When he came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, he refused to sue Marot Damim. He deferred to the authority of Rabbi Yehuda in Rabbi Yehuda's city. So I don't know today if there's a classification of Marot Da'atra today. But if there's a person you come into someone else's shteller, then it's not right to give psak halacha unless the rav defers to you and allows you to give psak halacha in that area. It has to be done carefully, and that person who comes to town should not give psak. Again, today, whether there's a mora d'atra, that's more questionable today, whether, because today there's so many, even within one city, you have multiple rabbanim, and within one kehila even, you have multiple rabbanim. So it's not so clear that you have that status of mora d'atra, but it's clear here that, according to Rabbi Lazar, who was the major authority in Marot, when it came to see Rabbi Yehuda, he refused to see Marot Damim. He deferred to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda gave permission to him to give psak, then he would be allowed to give psak in that area. All right, now we have a case by Rabbi. Rabbi ra dambalailo, he saw Marot Damim at night, v'timei, and he said it's tamei. Rabbi yom, v'tier. Then he saw it again in the morning, and he said it's tahor. Himtim shachat, he waited another hour. Chazar v'timei, and then he went back and said it's tamei. So Omar Oili Shema Taiti. Boy, man, maybe I made a mistake here. So Shema Taiti, the guy says, Vadaita. What do you mean maybe I made a mistake? He definitely made a mistake here. Titania, Lo Yumar Chacham, Ilu Ayalach, Ayav Vadaitamei. A Chacham should not say, if it was moist, then it definitely be Tamei. Elamar, Ainlo Ledayan, Elamashin Avrot. A Chacham can only deal with what he's looking at the current time. Well, he can only deal with what's immediately in front of him. He can't say, had it been, if it was. He has what it is in front of him. Whatever it is in front of him, he's got to give psak based on that. So now Gemara says, now let's explain the case here. The case is a little different than you think. Mikara achaz kevin tamei. When he saw it at night, he said definitely tamei. Kevin dechazel letzafra, dishtane, in the morning he saw that the color changed. Amar, vaday tohor hava. It's definitely tohor. Ubalayla hava deloy dechazel shapir. I didn't see it well at night because the lighting wasn't good enough. So we assume the lighting at night is what caused him to see it improperly, and that during the day, when he saw it clearly, it was definitely tohor. Kevin dechazer ad hadar ishtane, an hour later he sees the blood changed color again. Then, Amar hai tamehu, says this is tamei, umefakachu dekamefakeach lazil. It is fading. The color is fading over time. So his original thought was, at night I saw it was tamei. I see it in the morning, and now I'm saying it's tohor because it must be the better lighting makes it tohor. But then when he realized that the blood was continuously fading, then he says, I didn't make a mistake at night. When I got in the morning, it already had faded from what I had saw at night. And when I saw it at night, it was tamei. So Rabbi goes with his original position. His original position was that it was tamei, and he was right. He looked at it at that time. He doesn't have to look at it again in the morning. He saw it at night, and he was discerning it's tamei. Looking at the morning makes no difference. He can't say, had I had better light, it would have been different. No, he has to look at it in the lighting that he has at that time. Assuming that that lighting is appropriate for looking at it. We'll see that in a second. But Rabbi thought at night it was tamei. When he got to the morning, he saw it changing. Then he thought maybe the lighting caused him to see it improperly. But then when he realized that the problem wasn't with him, but with the damim, he went back to his original psak. So Rabbi badek l'oraner. Rabbi used to check by candlelight, which we see from here, because Rabbi did checks at night. So obviously he did it by oraner. So he thought that was good enough. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosef, Badik biyom meunan bene amude. Even on a cloudy day, he used to check between the pillars, meaning in the base medrash where he was sitting. He used to check there. Amar Rabbi Ami bar Shmuel v'kulan in bokina dela ben achamal etzel. You have to do it sunlight on the edge of shade and sunlight, right on the edge of shade, but in the sunlight. Rab Nachman Amar Rabbi Vua b'chamal etzel yado. You do it in direct sunlight. You just have to cast shade with your hand. So the last two opinions say you do it by sunlight. That's the way we pass in, that you have to use daylight or sunlight in order to see Marot Tamim. Right, then the last part of the Mishnah, the last red in the Mishnah is Gemazuk. So when it talks about the red in the Mishnah of diluted wine, it means diluted wine that has two parts water, one part wine. So Hasharoni Nidon Kekarmelei Achai. The wine from the Sharon has the same din as the wine from the Carmel that is in its raw state, meaning not diluted. So the diluted Sharoni looks like the Carmeli that is undiluted. Velo mazug, and not mixed, chadash velo yashan. New wine, meaning like grape juice, and not fermented wine. So the question of the modification over here, the way Rashi reads, and probably the simplest way to read it here is, that diluted Sharon wine looks like the Carmel wine that is undiluted, new wine, not fermented wine. The Rambam, I think, as well as some of the Gaonim, read it that it's modifying the Sharoni wine. When you dilute the wine from the Sharon, you have to start out with undiluted wine, and then you have to dilute new wine. It has to be fresh wine, not fermented wine that you are diluting. So they think it's modifying the Sharon part and not the Carmeli part. Tveria. You have to check them in a glass goblet from Tveria. Here's Tveria Pashut. So my time up. What's the reason for that? Amar Abayi, Shkolo Olam Kulo Makzik Log. If they make a goblet or glass cup that holds a log worth of liquids, Osimoto Mimana. They make it from 100 zuz worth of glass. Shnei Ugim, you make a cup or a goblet that holds 2 log, Osimoto Mimatayim. They make it out of 200 zuz. Kos Tveria Pashut. This goblet, this glass cup in Tveria, Afilu Makzik Shnei Ugim. Even if it holds 2 lugim, Osimoto Mimana. They make it out of 100 zuz. So that means that they're making a much bigger cup from less glass. You're going to get very thin glass. Why is that good? But I did a kolish. Since it's very thin, it is less distorting. The glass is less distorting of the color. So when you want to see this wine sitting in the goblet or glass to discern the color, you have to use glass that's not going to distort the color. So the thinner the glass, the better. So that's why they're saying you should put it in a glass cup of Tveria, which is very thin glass, because then the color itself will be very apparent, very bright, and you won't have any problems with distortion by the glass. Okay, we'll stop over here.